Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go in there?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good. I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Well, it's time for me to say good morning. Good morning. It's almost noontime. You are watching and listening to the Blog Talk Show. I was just thinking, and I am your host, Norma Adams-Wade. And as I always say, you, audience, are my co-host, and I unashamedly stole that from Wendy Williams. Let me explain my mask. I'm determined to wear my mask until I am told officially by health, national health officials, that it's absolutely no longer needed. But let me say this. I wear it because I'm in an office with other people, but right now I'm in a room by myself. So I am going to go ahead and take it off. Taking my mask off, if I can get it off. Okay. Now, I'm really looking forward to our show today. I'll tell you a little bit about our guest when I bring her in just a few minutes. Let me just say that if you would like to call in, we have a Blog Talk phone number that you can call and make comments or ask questions, and that number is 646-200-0459. And let me go ahead and bring our guest in.
Well, I just want to use, I have a minute that I wear when appropriate, but I can take it off.
Okay. Very good. Well, let me tell everybody who you are. Good morning, good morning, good morning out. Let me just try to wrap up all of this wonderful background that you have. Today, everybody, our guest is Dr. E. Faye Williams, and she is president and CEO of the National Congress of Black Women. And she was born in Louisiana, but she lives and works in Washington, D.C. Now, the National Congress of Black Women has a stellar background. It was co-founded by the late Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm and the late political activist C. Dolores Tucker, and some of the very familiar founding members and leaders were Dorothy Height and Coretta Scott King, among others. Now, Dr. Williams is a business owner. She's an administrator. She's an attorney, an educator, a minister. She is an author, a peace and human rights activist. She writes a syndicated column and does a broadcast show called Wake Up and Stay Woke. And the column, as our show was beginning, I was showing you our Texas Metro News local publication. Her column runs in our Texas Metro News publication. Now, we're going to get into talking about a book that she has written, and we'll get all into that. But just wanted to say just a little bit more about her. She is a graduate of, among many institutions and many higher education degrees. She is also a graduate of Grambling State University, and she was president of that association and what have you. She has numerous honors and awards, and just to name this, she was named to Ebony Magazine's 100 Most Influential Black Americans, and there are a number of other stellar awards and events that have involved her. So let me shut up a little bit and get right into welcoming her. Welcome, Dr. Ife Williams.
Well, thank you so very much, and I am an avid reader of that Texas Metro News. I love it. And I especially love it when I see me there, because I hope that my good friend Cheryl is thinking about me, and I'm looking forward to seeing all of you in Dallas soon.
Absolutely, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more. Now, part of the central part of our discussion will be you coming to Dallas this weekend, but we're going to get all into that and about the book that you'll be talking about when you come to Dallas this weekend. But I want to begin with just a little bit about you and how you came to be involved with the National Congress of Black Women. Now, I do understand that you were born in Louisiana, and I hope you'll tell us what part of Louisiana, and just kind of what motivated you that led you to end up becoming the current head person of the National Congress of Black Women. Tell us a little bit about you and how you got on your track that led you to where you are now.
Okay, well, I was born and grew up on the beautiful banks of the Cane River in Louisiana. Many people know about the Cane River. They know about the founding of Louisiana and Natchitoches Parish, for those of you who know Natchitoches Parish. I went to school there for a number of years. I went off to California with an uncle, lived with them for a while, and came back home, attended a school called St. Matthew High School at Melrose, Louisiana. When I was in 11th grade, or at the end of my 11th grade year, my mom moved to Alexandria, where she lived until just a few weeks ago. She made a transition a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay. All right.
Was just about 99 at the time. She always promised us she was going to live until she was 100. And under Dick Gregory's theory, she just about made it, because he said you have to count those 9 months you were in your mother's belly. So I lived there and went to Grambling, as you said, and went off to California again to go to UCLA and the University of Southern California to get degrees. I then worked as a teacher in the Los Angeles City School System for a while before I began working for the National Education Association, becoming its director in Atlanta and helping to merge the Black and White Teachers Association. Then I was sent overseas to become director of the Overseas Education Association. It just kind of went for there. I finally decided, through the encouragement of Congressman Mervyn Dimerly, to come to Washington, D.C. and go to law school, because that was about the only school I hadn't attended at that point. I had gone to get many degrees. As you know, I have three earned degrees. Well, you earn them all, so four when you count, you know, your law degree. And I decided to live here after that time. And from there, I, of course, met the one and only Dick Gregory.
Very, very good. Thank you so much to bring us to that point. And that's exactly where exactly where I wanted to pick up. Bring us now, how did you meet Dick Gregory? Were you at some public event? How did you meet him?
I ran for the United States Congress. I was the first Black American to run for the United States Congress in Louisiana. We had people running for local offices there, but I decided, with the encouragement of Congressman Mervyn Dimerly, by the way, many of you may know, he was the first Black Lieutenant Governor of California, who served in all the positions, you know, the Assembly, Senate, everything. To go back home after I graduated from law school and run for office, I did. And one evening, when I was having a political event, a fundraiser, Dick Gregory was visiting his daughter at Louisiana State University, and Congressman Dimerly invited him to come over to my event. I was talking and talking about all the things my mother taught me, you know, how politicians always do. And he was so impressed with that. So when he came up, he said, I've got to meet your mother, who was in the audience, by the way. I've got to meet your mother because my children don't remember anything I say. In fact, I hardly get a chance to talk with them. So he continued to talk about that. He said, the only time I get a chance to talk with my children is when I pull a chair up to the refrigerator. They're going to come there eventually. That's when you get to talk with them. And then when, after the race was over, when I had, quote, lost by less than 0.5% after a serious computer breakdown, I came back to Washington and decided to go back to work here. And one Friday evening, as any of you know, Friday is the middle of traffic wherever, in whatever city you live. He called me from Baltimore and asked to come and pick him up. And he said he didn't have a way at his show to get back to D.C., where he lived and where I live. As much as I hated driving in that traffic, he was so charming that he charmed me into driving to Baltimore to pick him up. And, of course, when I got there, he wasn't ready. He's never ready. Time meant nothing to him. If whatever had to be done, whomever he had to talk with at that point, he did it. And packing was something he just kind of put off. And when I say packing, you know, he would carry 8, 9, 10, 11 bags with him. So I had to help him pack, get things in the car. And on the way back, I got to know a lot about him. We had a chance to talk a lot. And a few days afterwards, he started inviting people over to my house. He just kind of took over my place to show all of his friends how to make veggie burgers and to show them it was just as tasty as those that they thought were healthier, were good, you know, with meat. And he said, it's in the seasoning, you know, that makes it taste good. So he would put his seasoning of all kind in there. And of course, I'm from Louisiana, so he always had to put cayenne in it. But his favorite thing to put on those veggie burgers was just a lot of cheese, at which point I'm wondering, where's the health value?
Exactly.
If you put all this cheese on it, you know. But now that after you cook, you know, you have to wash the dishes. So he decided, first of all, his family was surprised to know he knew how to cook anything. But then he taught me how to wash dishes, another surprise, because I'm sure he never washed dishes at home. But he had learned it in the military, and he said you have to rinse the dishes off, just run water on them. Then you put hot water and Clorox in the sink, you put the dishes in there, and you let them soak. Once they've soaked, then you put them in the dishwasher. And at that point, I'm wondering, like that little girl on television, well, what is the dishwasher for?
Right,
because they always seem to be
clean.
That was kind of my first experience doing things with him. And in the meantime, we both learned that we would both do picketing and protesting various things. And sometimes we'd ride down the street and stop. We'd see a bunch of people protesting, picketing for something. We didn't know what. We'd just get out of the car, come back, and see what they were picketing for. And, of course, we always had the picket sign in the trunk of our cars so that we could just join any picketing that we wanted to. And we did that so often.
Well, now, I've got to ask this. I tell you what. Let me go ahead and tell our audience about you coming here to Dallas. Now, you have written a book about your dear friend, Dick Gregory. Let me tell everybody a little bit about the book. The book is titled Dick Gregory, Wake Up and Stay Woke, Running for Life. Now, by the way, that book title, let me just say this as an aside, brings to my mind the song by Teddy Pendergrass and Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes that we use here on this show as our parting song.
I use that. I have a show called Wake Up and Stay Woke on WTFW.
Exactly right.
And I use that song too.
Yeah, and you also, you use it here, the column that you do for Texas Metro News, that is the title of your column as well as your broadcast show.
Right.
So,
but
you
know, why? Because the last words I heard Mr. Gregory say were wake up and stay woke. He had been very quiet. He had not been sitting up in bed or anything that week that he was in the hospital. And that afternoon, people were making so much noise in his room, and they were just talking. And he sat up in bed, and he said to everybody, shut up, and I won't say what
that other word was.
We can fill in the blank. You can't learn anything if you're always talking. You got to wake up and stay woke. Those are the dearest words I remember. And as I was talking to him, as he had passed away, I pulled up a chair, sat there by his bed, and promised him that I would do all the things that we had been doing together. I would try to make a difference in this world. And that is what I have tried to do. And I have done the radio program in remembrance of him. I write in remembrance of him. And just recently, I wrote the book in remembrance of him because I wanted people to know that he was more than a comedian. He was so many more things.
Let me jump right in right there and tell our audience that you, audience, can come this Sunday, which is July 18th, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., to the African American Museum at Fair Park, and you can meet Dr. Ife Williams. She will sign an autograph, a copy of this book about this extremely important Dick Gregory, his life, and various memories that she has and important pieces of information about him. So again, let me say, one of the reasons why this blog is so important today is to let you know that Dr. Ife Williams will be here in Dallas, and I'm going to give the time and date again. It's this Sunday, July 18th, from 4 to 6 p.m. at the African American Museum at Fair Park. And also, the publisher of Texas Metro News, who also is the force behind this show, Cheryl Smith, will moderate the question and answer session. So you will get a chance to ask questions. You'll get a chance to buy the book. You'll get a chance to have it autographed. So we're going to go ahead and pick up from there and go back to our discussion about Dick Gregory and how Dr. Williams got with him. So I want to know, when did you begin to realize, and somewhere along the way, I think in the book or somewhere, you describe him as one of your best friends, if not your best friend. What drew you to him? What stands out about him that made you click with him?
Well, let me first of all say that Cheryl is mentioned in the book because she too is a friend of Mr. Gregory. And I hope she's had a chance to read it and to see what many things he said about her.
Wonderful.
I'm really excited about coming to Dallas. She's been on my program, too.
Okay.
But the thing that drew me to him was that he always liked intellect. I mean, I don't mean necessarily that you have to go to college to get a degree.
Yeah.
But he liked, and particularly he honored women who were intellectual, women who were doing things. And so when he started coming to the event of the National Congress of Black Women, every year he made it here, except one, while I was national president, because he had events back in his hometown of St. Louis. But he would come, and he would meet the women, and he would talk with them, talk with all of us, until late into the night. It didn't matter what he had to do. He was always interested in talking with you, finding out what you were doing to make a difference in this world. So that was very attractive to me, that he never rushed. He, no matter what he needed to be doing or whatever otherwise, he would talk with you until you had talked out or until he had fallen asleep there talking to you, and then he'd wake up and start all over. And I was just absolutely amazed with his intellect. He read so many newspapers, read so many magazines, so many books until his eyes got bad. Then he had me read the books to him. So he would always buy two books, come to my house, he would take one home, he would see one here. And he could be traveling to Spain or anywhere, he would call and say, baby, look on page 63 and give me that quote exactly that says whatever, you know, because he knew exactly where it was, but he wanted it to be right. So I learned so much from him by reading all these books and magazines and newspapers and shopping for them with him. And then, of course, I liked the idea that he didn't just sit around and talk like a lot of our leaders do.
Right.
He actually did things. He put his life on the line. He gave up millions of dollars to be involved in the civil rights movement and more. And he never stopped that until he left this world. He was always making a difference. When he got sick, he was actually on his way to the West Coast to do something that makes a difference among our people.
Now, the Dallas audience will, and you mentioned Cheryl Smith and her friend, close friendship with Dick Gregory. Now, the Dallas audience will also remember that Dick Gregory would come faithfully each year. Cheryl Smith would sponsor the Don't Believe the Hype Bowl-a-thon, which was a fundraiser that was very effective, and she would disperse the funds among social nonprofits and what have you, scholarships and what have you. But Dick Gregory was a faithful attendee of the Don't Believe the Hype Bowl-a-thon. But let me go ahead and ask. So there you are, remembering as you told us his words when he sat up in bed and was talking to people and making all his noise talking and said, stay woke. So give us the inspiration of when, at what point, I don't know if it jumped out in your mind right at that point or you had to go and sleep on it for a couple of months. When did you decide that the right thing to do was to write this book?
Well, when he transitioned, I was lost.
Yeah.
Friends were calling me from all over the world asking me if it were true, because everybody thought Dick Gregory would live forever.
Forever.
That was never a thought in our minds that he'd be gone at some time. And we have been doing so many things together. So when I'm in pain, I write. Not long ago, my good friend Cicely Tyson died. I had to write about her.
Yeah.
My mom died. Everyone is saying, now I have to write something about my mom. People are calling, Minister Farrakhan, many more people are calling, you know, to talk about my wonderful mother as they knew her and knowing the things that she taught me. So I thought the best way to handle the pain I was feeling when he left and when people were calling on me to ask, well, what would he do about this? What would he say about that? I said, well, the best thing for me to do is to write. I don't have to think about it. I know what he would have said or what he would have done, because these are things he said to me or that we've done together.
Right.
So I just sat at the computer, started writing, and then a few months later, I had more pages than I probably needed, and the publisher finally said, okay, we've got enough now. Let's go with that. I'm using a black publisher, by the way, Noah's Ark Publishing Company. And they've been wonderful to work with. But anybody who wants to write a book, you might want to talk with Mr. Laval Bell, who's in charge of that, and all of his staff members who are so wonderful and helped me through this book.
Okay.
And that was my you know, helping me with my what I was feeling as he was to memorialize it, to keep him in the thoughts of people. And recently, there was, I found out from his son, Dr. Christian Gregory, who works with me often, that a documentary was coming out called The One and Only Dick Gregory. So I decided to speed up my writing so that it could come out about the time that the documentary did. And that is exactly what happened. As you know, just a week ago, the documentary was shown on Showtime called The One and Only Dick Gregory. And then my book came out called Wake Up and Stay Woke, with Dick Gregory. They're promoting him because he did so much. He mentored so many people. He helped so many people with illnesses and what have you. And their thinking converted a lot of people to making a difference in this world.
Right, exactly right. Now, as you mentioned, the documentary and so forth and so on, there has been a lot written about Gregory, even when he was still on the planet. People talked about him because, like you said, once you were in his presence, it didn't leave you too soon. It kind of stuck with you. But I want to ask you to tell us, how do you feel your particular book distinguishes itself from other things, articles and what have you, books, documentaries that have been produced about him? What makes yours different?
Well, that's an easy one. Many people write about him, and you're right, so much has been written about him. Even one of his books came out in Japanese not long ago, and another one, I think, is about to come out in Croatian. I mean, people all over the world love him, but many of them are writing by researching him.
Okay.
My book is about things I experienced with him. I can tell of his jokes there, because he always told me that both President Barack Obama and I would have made good comedians. Now, I know that about Barack, but not about myself. But I did put in a few of the jokes I had heard him tell, but most of it is about the work we did together and who he really was, how he grew up, and what caused him to think about things like, and to teach others that God and fear do not occupy the same space. So you have to be not afraid to do this work that we do in the civil rights movement and in the human rights movement. Here's was not just about civil rights. He and I have traveled all over the world. We've contacted and helped people all over the world. So as I said, it's just a little different. I'm talking in the book mainly about him and about things people may not know about him.
Right.
They know him as a comedian. I know him as much more a comedian, human rights worker, nutritionist, civil rights worker, you name it. I've experienced many of those things with him. In the early days, Mrs. Gregory experienced a lot of the work with him on Indian rights up in the upper northwest, down south. She went to jail with him. So you see, she knows a lot more about him than I do. She participated in a lot of activities. But I also had the opportunity in later life to do some of these things as she had done with him earlier. And I'm very pleased about that. She's a wonderful person too, very thoughtful. And at the same time that he was out doing all these things for our people, she was rearing 10 children. So you have to appreciate her for there. And I do mention her several times in the book. And she has wonderful children. I mean, she has a daughter who sings and dances and acts, but, you know, things that matter. She has a son, Dr. Christian Gregory, who is a chiropractor, but still involved in carrying on the memory of his father. He and I work closely together.
Let me just pause a second to tell the audience what we're doing. Audience, we are blessed to be talking with Dr. Ife Williams. She has written a book about her dear friend, Dick Gregory. And we know that Gregory was, as she has said, a social commentator. He was a civil rights activist. He was a well-known, just bust your side laughing, comedian. I mean, he was just shot from the hip.
We told everybody about drinking water, too, the value of drinking water.
Listen, I was a convert to his preaching. I'll use the term preach about the value of drinking water because I never did it. But he really made me stop and listen about drinking water. But let me just tell that Dr. Ife Williams will be in Dallas this Sunday to autograph and talk about the book that she has written about her dear friend, Dick Gregory. And you, audience, can be there. It's going to be Sunday at the African American Museum from 4 to 6 p.m. And our own publisher here, Cheryl Smith, who Dr. Williams was just saying, is also mentioned in the book because she was also a friend of Dick Gregory. Smith will moderate the question and answer session of Dr. Williams' appearance this Sunday. So we want you to come. We want you to get this book, get her autograph. And so anyway, now let's move on. You were talking about Dick Gregory's activism. Now, I want to hear a little bit more. Now, we know him here in the United States, but you were saying that he didn't just stay in these states, that his activism, and I want you to also share with us, I'm getting ahead of myself, but I wanted to comment on, you said the difference with your book is that a lot of people who talk about him, they do it through research, but you do it because you were right there experiencing many of those things with him. Please tell us some of the global activism that you recall, that you personally witnessed, and why you decided to get involved in some of the places where you went outside the United States. Tell us.
Well, actually, the first one I want to mention started in the United States. In 2011, mm-hmm. there was a big explosion in the South near New Orleans of the British Petroleum Company.
Okay.
And people, I think 11 people were killed. Mm-hmm. Many, many more people died as a result of the toxins that mm-hmm. came in their water and in the food they had to eat. And we were trying to get people to file for the damage that they had done against British Petroleum. We were just sort of sent all around in the United States. Nothing was happening. We traveled all over New Orleans, to Mobile, to Pensacola, Polk County, everywhere that people had been damaged, and to no avail. The British Petroleum, which, you know, is all over our neighborhood, by the way, BP, that's what it's called, they were not doing anything to help all of these people as we were trying to encourage them that they had the right to do it. So when they were not moving on it, Mr. Gregory, the police chief from Pritchett, Alabama, and Art Rocker, we decided to go to the British Petroleum office, which was in England.
Mm-hmm.
We visited them. Now, I'm a lawyer, but we didn't know the laws in London. But that didn't stop us from picketing, because we were there to talk with the people at British Petroleum and make the case to them, who, by the way, found them telling us to go back to Washington and talk to certain people. But we did that. We made it clear that British Petroleum needed to pay for the damage that had been done. We then went out and visited the black community. Whatever country we went to, you know, we went into the black community. We had an opportunity to talk with many people there to find out that they were experiencing many of the same kinds of problems that we here in the United States experience.
Yeah.
We had interviews with their newspaper and just went among the people. Mr. Gregory always liked to walk and to talk with people. And people there, you know, recognized him too, from the airport, everywhere. People always recognized him, no matter where we went in the world. So we came back and we continued the work on trying to get some reparations for people who had lost their homes, their businesses, some even their lives at that point from British Petroleum. That's the case we have worked on to some extent until now, even after Mr. Gregory. We went to other nations like Senegal. We went I can't remember all the places that we went, but it was always, we went into our community there.
Okay.
We talked with people. I should probably say, gave them advice on what they should be doing. And that's just kind of how we rolled wherever we went. It didn't matter whether we knew the laws there or not of talking to people. And it just makes me think about places like Cuba and Haiti and Palestine and so many places where things are going on right now. But you know what? Some of those things, because some of us did not wake up and say, well, are happening right here in our country. And we've got to, more of us have got to get back to work, mentoring our young people, getting them involved in voting rights and civil rights, human rights, because that's what Dick Gregory would be doing were he still here today.
And let me jump right in there, which brings me to my next question. And you mentioned this a little earlier in our talk. In your book, and by the way, everybody, the name of the book is Dick Gregory, Wake Up and Stay Woke, Running for Life. But now you mentioned in the book, and in your talking about the book, that you describe him as brave and fearless. And you said that one quote is fear, as you quoted him saying, fear should never stop anybody from doing the right thing. And my question to you is, have you taken that on as a mantra in your own life? And how have you taken that and run with it in your own life?
Well, absolutely. It doesn't mean being crazy and walking into one
right.
But you walk into some things and it does happen. And that has happened to me. I've been on peace missions where we were held up in the Arabian Sea for 20 days at gunpoint just before that first Gulf War. So that is one of the kinds of things that he was done and that I got the courage to do from him, from Congressman Dimerly and others in my life. When anything happens in the world, whether it's Palestine or wherever, I believe I have a responsibility to do what I can. First of all, to teach our people about what is going on, to teach them what they can do to make a difference, because that is what Mr. Gregory always did. Sometimes, you know, you may have a job, and as a result of some of the things you say, or you may be running for office as a result of some of the things you say or do, people may decide not to support you. That happened to me in my congressional race because I was talking about fairness in the Middle East.
Right.
Things will get you in trouble. Mr. Gregory left, you know, multi-million dollars on the table so that he could help to make a difference, because he knew there were people even down south who were afraid to get involved in their own freedom, in their own, you know, ways to have dignity. But you do it anyway because you know it's right. And every leader cannot be in the movement just to improve themselves and to help people like them. You are in the movement to help to make a positive difference in the lives of other people. And that's more important than your comfort, your convenience, your family's health. It's for all of us that Mr. Gregory did things, and I feel that I have that same responsibility. Sure, I get criticized for lots of things that I do, but I still believe I'm doing the right thing, or I wouldn't be taking risks, you know, of everything that I have, that I own. But you just can't make your home, your car, all that stuff more important than the lives and the dignity of our people. That's the way he was, and that is the way I try to be in his absence.
I just need to jump in there and ask. Now, you know, fear is something. I mean, fear can be real. And yeah, we all are not necessarily brave warriors. But tell me and tell the audience, and I have to think that when you got up on mornings when you were getting ready to go to a place where there was the Gulf War and things like that that were not safe, areas that were not safe, how did you just take those steps and decide, as you just said, well, I'm going to do this anyway. I'm not comfortable. I'm nervous. How did you process that?
Well, I think it helps that many of us who work in civil rights, human rights, et cetera, are also believers in God. And we believe that God will be with us as we go. And whatever happens, God is going to be there with us. If it means that we have to give our lives, we have to give our possessions or what have you, that is something we owe to our people, because God has done so much for all of us. So it's called giving back and trying to make a difference. And we believe that whatever happens is supposed to happen. You don't go into it, you know, wishing for bad things.
Right.
You have to go in for hoping that you're going to make a positive difference. And that makes you more comfortable. I've gone into Haiti. I was the home of President Aristide shortly after his home was ransacked. Mm-hmm. We've seen this recently.
Yeah.
The president has been killed there. But unless somebody goes and tries to change those things, change themselves, and to help them be braver, nothing ever changes. Somebody has got to do it. And God has blessed me in many ways, just as he's blessed Mr. Gregory in many ways. And we believe we owe it to our people to try to make a difference, because our ancestors did it for us. And we have the responsibility to carry on to make things bigger and better.
Now, you are part of the mechanisms that you use to carry out this goal in your life. Again, you do a column, a syndicated column, and it's also called Wake Up and Stay Woke. And then you have a broadcast show also called Wake Up and Stay Woke. What's the message? Is what you were just telling us, is that the message that you seek to bring through these two avenues? What is the message when you sit down to write, when you sit in front of the microphone to do your broadcast? What is the message that you're giving to the people listening, to the audience? And we're breaking up a little bit, but I think it'll get okay in a minute. Okay, can you say it again?
I said, it's just asking yourself, how can I make a difference today? How can I help someone to understand something they need to understand in order for them to make a difference?
Yeah.
We can all make a difference. It may be small. I mean, grandmothers, mothers, or, you know, all kinds of people can make a difference. We sometimes get it wrong. We think that we have to have a lot of education in order to make a difference. But there are people like Latasha Brown down in Georgia. There's Stacey Abrams. We've never heard of these people before, but look at the difference they have made in the attitudes of our people. So while I know that I don't do all of those things every day, we try to do something every day
that
makes people more lovable, that makes people awake and knowing that they have a responsibility to make a difference in the world. And that's cool. You just want to do something, say something that helps somebody to make a positive difference in the world.
Okay, let me just take a brief pause and remind the audience that we are talking with Dr. E. Faye Williams. She is the president and CEO of the National Congress of Black women. And we said earlier, we reminded you that the outstanding late Congresswoman, the first African-American Congresswoman elected, Shirley Chisholm, and the political force, C. Dolores Tucker, were the co-founders of the National Congress of Black Women. And then other outstanding early founding members were Dorothy Height and Coretta Scott King. And of course, now Dr. Ife Williams is heading that organization. She will, as I said, be in Dallas this weekend, Sunday, at the African American Museum. She will sign, autograph, and tell us about this book that she has written about her very dear friend, the late Dick Gregory. And the book is called Dick Gregory, Wake Up and Stay Woke, Running for Life. Now, I wanted to, we think of Dick Gregory as a civil rights activist for descendants of Africa, but you mentioned the petroleum issue. What are some of the other issues that he just jumped right in there with?
Well, right, in the upper Northwest, when there was an attempt to take away the fishing rights of Native American brothers and sisters, he and Mrs. Gregory went there and worked to make sure that they had those rights. After all, this country was stolen from Native Americans, mm-hmm. and they deserve every right that they should have to live a comfortable and convenient life in this country. So he went to them. He went to help. He went to South Dakota to help with the pipeline. Now, I would have gone there, but it was just so cold. I can't stand any cold.
Oh,
so,
I'm with you.
I participated. There were a group of Native women who were picketing here in Washington, D.C., so I joined their picketing.
Okay.
But he would go to deal with things about nutrition. You know, he didn't mind talking about what a big farm or anybody else was doing to our health. He would make sure that everybody knew that all these medicines they were taking were not necessarily healing them, but were costing them a fortune and often hurting them and making life worse for them. So he never mind. We got into the British Petroleum issue where people had lost or were losing their property, their jobs, their land, et cetera, what they had to eat, their businesses. So it didn't matter what the issue was. If it were an issue that damaged people, he was willing to find a way to help them to get out of the situation, to solve the problem. And that's what I hope that my life has been, has increased to do since he left us, because now he's not with us. And I did promise him that I would carry on the kind of work that he's doing. And people often call on me to do that.
Yes. Now, the National Congress of Black Women has an entity called the Dick Gregory Society. Tell us about that, and how did that come about? What are its goals?
Well, actually, I formed the Dick Gregory Society. That's an independent organization.
Okay.
And you can find it online. It's called, you can find it at dickgregorysociety.org.
Okay.
And I, too, have a website, which is just drethewilliams.com, because we put up information about Mr. Gregory that people need to know to help them to remember all of the things that he did and to inspire them, not just for them to know, but to inspire them to get involved in things around them. And I do the same with my own website. Now, the National Congress of Black Women has always, we've always invited Dick Gregory to our events, and he's always participated and helped us in many ways. What we did some years ago, maybe, I don't remember how long, maybe 2015, we did raise funds and we did carry on the project to get his Hollywood star for him. He should have had it years before that, but he did not have it. We in the National Congress recognized that he did. And so I helped to organize, along with, other friends, Joe Madison, which many of you may know. He has worldwide listeners and friends, too. We raised the money, and we petitioned to be Hollywood star, to have a Hollywood star for him. He now has a star there. And so that's what that's about. But I'm also national president of the Dick Gregory Society. That's different from the National Congress,
okay.
But we've worked in tandem, yes.
So it is an independent organization. Okay.
And again, human rights organization.
Human rights. Now, you said it has a website. Can you say that again?
DickGregory.org.
DickGregory.org.
DickGregorySociety.org.
I'm sorry, DickGregorySociety.org. Very good. Now, I need to ask you, you know, writing is not always that easy. Sometimes it just flows. But I'm wondering, was there any part of this book that was kind of hard for you to write?
Well, the hardest thing was getting started.
I can imagine.
That to anybody who wants to write, all you got to do is sit down one day, whether it's with your pen and pencil or whether it's on the computer, and make that first start. I find writing chronologically as much as you can the best way to write because it flows better. You know, now, if you have to skip around and tell one story before the other, that's fine. But I find writing things as they happen and also keeping notes, even little scribblings on brown paper or things, envelopes in the hotel or whatever, write it. But then as soon as you get to your place where you can put it together, your computer, put that in. You may have to come back and check it. And you may have to come back and look at whether you're using the appropriate English. I was an English teacher, so
right.
I'm real careful about that. And But the hardest thing, as I said, is just to make up your mind that you are going to write. You don't have to think about everything. But as you put down the beginning, you can just move toward the end. And in the end, that is, again, a hard part to do because you have to put there what it is you hope people have learned from what you are saying and tell the story of why you wrote the book. I tried to do that at the beginning and at the end, but I found myself going back to the end always. What is my last statement going to be? Because that's going to tell a big part of the story, what I was trying to do. And I wanted people to remember Dick Gregory and all the things that he did, not just his comedy.
Now, what is on my mind, you are a speaker, and you travel, tour, and speak. I'd like to hear, what are some of your favorite top, you're also a minister.
Yes.
Some of your favorite topics or your most effective topics that you really like to stand in front of an audience and talk about?
Well, I attended Grambling University, as you said, and Coach Eddie Robinson was one of my best friends there. And he always talked about it, and my mother had talked about it too, is that you can do anything you want to do so long as you're willing to pay the price. That, I mean, I think in everything I talk about, that's it. You know, sometimes people think, they look at somebody who they may consider as powerful or maybe a good speaker or whatever, and they think, oh, I'll never be able to do that. So my message is always, if you're willing to pay the price, you can learn, you can do whatever you want to do. So that's the best one. The other one usually has something to do about fairness and dignity for women, because we have never had equal rights in this country. So I talk a lot about equality of opportunity for women. And when I talk to audiences, it's a little different when you, no matter what people say, when you talk to a white audience and when you talk to a black audience, mm-hmm. when you talk to a white audience, you're generally trying to give them facts, give them details.
Yeah.
When you're talking to a black audience, or when I am, you're trying to not give them facts or whatever. They generally know that. You're trying to move them to action.
Okay.
So that you want to build that momentum for them to want to get involved and understand why they need to be involved and that whatever little bit they can offer can make a difference, but they have a responsibility to do that.
Now, I need to ask, and we're getting close to our winding up time. We don't want to hold you prisoner too long, but we're really just thoroughly enjoying talking with you. I hate to kind of let you go. Gregory was nonstop. He really was nonstop. Why do you think he was so driven? Why was he so driven?
Well, because he knew that, you know, each of us has only a certain amount of time on this earth. I guess I'm the same way.
Okay.
I wake up in the middle of the night and think of something that I could do to make a difference, and I write it down. I scribble it on a piece of paper. He would do the same thing. People were always calling him, asking him to do things. He and I would stay up all night practically sometimes trying to figure out something to help somebody, finding a way to help them. She grew up without a lot of resources in his life, just as I grew up. We both had large families.
Okay.
There were seven people in my family. There were seven girls in his family. And girls had to take responsibility for a lot of things that you generally think of as men's responsibilities, mm-hmm. or what have you. And he wanted us to know that we, and my mom, I have to give her credit too. She just left us, but I have to give her credit. She always taught us to be honest,
mm-hmm.
to be caring about our neighbors, mm-hmm. as we cared about ourselves. And whatever resources we had, no matter how little, we had the responsibility to share those with our neighbors. Mr. Gregory was the same way. He had grown up without many resources. And so whatever he had, he always wanted to share. I would see him walk down the street and give his last dollar to a brother who walked up to him and asked him, "Brother Gray, got a dollar?" That was every time he went out on the street. And if he didn't have one, he would turn around and say, "Baby, give me a couple of dollars." He always gave them more than they asked for because he believed they were more likely to do something good with it,
yeah.
if he gave them more.
Right.
And so I adopted that that theory too. I do whatever I can. Sometimes my bank account gets awfully low doing it, but it's sort of like wherever you got that, there is some more. He was always very positive. He would tell you, don't put negative things out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, oh, I know I'll never be able to do that. You're
yeah.
probably right, you know, if you put that out there.
Right,
right. It's a positive thing, mm-hmm. and I've learned to do that too.
Now, you mentioned that he was the father of 10 children. Tell us a little bit about him, Dick Gregory, as a family man. We know he's a warrior. We know he's a protester. We know he travels and delivers messages and tackles issues. What was he like as a family man, as a father, as a husband, to his wife, Lillian, I think you said her name was.
Yeah, Miss Lil. She likes to be called Lil.
Miss
Lil,
okay.
Right. Well, you know, he didn't have the opportunity to be at home a lot.
Right.
Even before he met Bill, he
uh-huh.
was doing some break into comedy. But one of the things he always recognized was his responsibility to talk with them,
okay.
and to be with them. And so they had a family calls. The family still has calls now that he's gone. He went wherever his children were, whenever they had events, every time he could make it. His daughter, who's an actress, singer, etc., he would go to her events. And when he couldn't go, he would ask me to go. I often went. I've heard her do so many shows. I could almost do her shows, you know, because so many times. But he cared about them, and he let them know he cared about them in whatever way he could. He involved his sons here in everything that he did, basically. His son, Dr. Christian Gregory, is now in charge of everything about the remembrance of him and carrying on and making sure that their mom is okay. And that the family benefits from the things that Mr. Gregory did when he was here on Earth with us. So there was just so much he did. He talked about what his children were doing. If he had accomplished something great in his jokes and his programs, he would always mention them. And then he'd go home whenever he could. He never missed going home to vote. That was important. And so that was just teaching his children that was important. He worked long hours, and I know his many of his children to be the same way. They work in many different things, many long hours, and are very considerate, basically, of people that they work with. And they keep him often just as I do. You know, that being lovable is more important than being loved. And I think that's important. And then the one we've mentioned a few times is that God and fear do not occupy the same space. So you don't allow fear from keeping you from doing what you need to do. I think he gave his children a good background so that they could function while they were away from him or he was away from them. And in that way, my mom was the same way. She had 9 children. And we didn't have a father in my home after I was 11 years old, but she always taught us how to be independent, how to be caring, and not to be afraid, and always want to better yourself so that you could make a difference in the lives of other people.
Now, speaking of making a difference in the little time we've got left, if you don't mind, we might go over 1 or 2 minutes. But some of the national issues, I would just like to hear a little bit of your take on them. You are head of the very prominent National Congress of Black Women. And we know, and you mentioned it yourself, that right now voter suppression is a huge issue right now. And here, us here down here in Texas, our legislators have left the special session that our governor called and come up there where you are to try to stop this voter suppression action that they say is simply making voting more honest. But the National Congress, have y'all taken a position on this? Are y'all involved in it anyway? What is your take, or what would you want to say to the public about this issue from your position as head of the National Congress of Black Women?
Well, yes, we do take a position on every issue, because so many of them that are going on today would impact us negatively if they were to pass or not pass whichever it is. Yes, we applaud the people from Texas, the Democrats, as it were, for doing what they're doing. That's what I mean by taking an action to make a difference.
Uh-huh.
You know, people just sat there and just let it go down the drain. They didn't. It's a way, too, of educating the rest of us what's going on there. Just as we go around the country educating people that we don't have state, look, we don't have a voting representative in the United States Congress. We tell that story as often as we can. We hold rallies. We visit other cities. We talk to our friends and their families and ask them to have their representatives support our right to have statehood. We give donations as individuals to people, because, you know, as a nonprofit, we can't give money out of our treasury for that. But as individuals, we teach our members to donate to those who seem to be willing to take on the issues for us. And don't forget that they are giving us something to help us. So when they call on us to be there, to picket, to protest, to sit for a meeting, what have you, we have to be there. We do that. Our members are very important. And many of our members run for office themselves because they know how important it is to change some of the people who are in there on making life difficult for us. We talk to them about the issues of voting rights, of voting, voter suppression, of, you know, all the things that are going on around the country, and try to get them. So if you don't get up and be involved in your community, these same things could happen. So that's a part of the wake up, but also stay woke.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can just assume because something was solved yesterday in one place that it's also solved everywhere else, or that you're going to keep that resolution if you don't stay on it. You have to stay on these things every day. Voting, everything we talk about basically is your voting. You have an obligation to do that, because people have died to give you that right and to get to where you are today. So you have a duty to do certain things like voting and to help to take care of your neighbors, your friends, your family.
Okay, now in our wrap-up, I do want to ask, are there any other points that you want to use this time for right now to speak to our audience about? And while you're saying that, we didn't talk about, even though it's been inferred throughout our conversation, but we really didn't talk about the mission statement, if you will, of the National Congress of Black Women. What are y'all about? What are your purposes? And what other points would you want to talk about?
Well, in terms of the National Congress of Black Women, Dr. Keith Dolores Tucker actually called the first meeting and pulled women together for the purpose of our understanding that Black women were not being given a fair shake, particularly in politics.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember when Shirley Chisholm, Barbara Jordan, all these wonderful women were out there doing great things, neither of them was considered for vice president when Geraldine Ferraro was just pulled out of a hat to run. It's not that we were upset because they didn't win, but because they weren't even considered to do that.
Mm.
Decided that it was time to get Black women more involved in politics. We were doing so much around the country, but we were not being recognized.
Yeah.
So Dr. Tucker then, to be called the founder when she called all the women together.
Okay.
Shirley Chisholm was our first chairperson.
Okay.
And I'm the first president.
Okay.
I followed them. And it was Dr. I was friends with both of them.
Yeah.
And when Dr. Tucker became ill, she had made it clear to me, women in the organization, that she wanted me to follow in her footsteps. And I've taken a lot of abuse to do that sometimes, but I have hung in there for 16 years now, and I've enjoyed it, and I'm proud of what we do. We work for the benefit of Black women and their families,
okay,
which means it includes their sons, their fathers, their husbands, etc. and we try to make a difference in the lives of those families, no matter what it is. We don't limit it to saying we just work on housing. No, we work on nutrition, we work on housing, we work on voting rights, we work on, you know, everything that you can think of. We work with returning citizens. It doesn't matter. If young people need clothing, we give that to them. If they need shoes, we try to get that for them. We give scholarships. We do whatever we need in our community to be helpful to that community. I'm very proud of all the work that women all across this country do who are members of the National Congress of Black Women. They're doing great work.
Now, we always, and we usually put it in our chat, give ways for that the public, our audience, can reach you now. And I think we're doing, by the way, in the chat, Cheryl Smith says, thank you, Dr. Ife Williams.
Did she read what I said about her, I wonder?
Well, she'll tell us later.
All right. Yeah, we don't want to tell everything that's in the book. I just want to mention that Cheryl is there.
And that's a valuable piece of information. That ought to spur our audience to come out, and we're going to urge them again this Sunday from 4 to 6 at the African American Museum. You can come and meet Dr. Ife Williams, who is the author of the book about her dear friend and our dear friend as well, Dick Gregory. The title of the book is the book title is Dick Gregory, Wake Up and Stay Woke, Running for Life. And so you can come to the museum 4 to 6 this Sunday, July 18th. Dr. Williams will autograph the book. Cheryl Smith, our publisher here in Dallas, will moderate the question and answer session. So you'll have a time to have question and answer. So the chat tells how we can reach you, and the phone number, I'll go ahead and say it. The phone number for the National Congress of Black Women is 202-678-6788. It's in the chat, 202-678-6788. And then the website, nationalcongressbw.org, nationalcongressbw for Black Women.org. So that's how you can reach her. And I think we're going to go ahead and give you some freedom now. I hope we have not worn you out.
Coming up to our awards ceremony. That's another way to ensure our people that we appreciate the work that they are doing.
Okay.
So annually we have an awards ceremony. You can learn more about it on that website you mentioned, nationalcongressbw.org. It will be virtual this year because of the pandemic.
Okay.
Many of your viewers will also join us for that day. All the information is on that website. And I look forward to seeing everybody in Dallas on Sunday. I know it's going to be a great time. I have a wonderful friend from here in D.C. who is originally from Dallas, I believe. She's going to fly to Dallas, and she cares so much about this book organization that she's flying there for her birthday and asking all of her friends to buy the book instead of giving me a birthday present. So I'm so excited to be coming to Dallas.
And we are excited that you're coming.
Some friends in Dallas.
Oh, you do? So you have some relatives here?
Oh, yes. I have relatives in Dallas and friends, yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, we
have Emerson Walls there from Grambling. We have Willie Davis, who's a good friend of mine. I mean, just so many people I know there. So I'm coming like home, actually. I'm leaving Houston, going to Dallas.
Wonderful.
Yeah, in Houston too.
Okay. All righty. We're so grateful that you spent time with us today, and we're looking forward to the public coming, and you'll sign an autographed book for them, 4 to 6, Sunday, July 18, African American Museum. Thank you.
Thank
Have
you
a great
so
day.
Much. I just want to say that everybody, I know that Mr. Gregory would come back and get me if I charged a whole lot of money for my book. So everybody can afford this book. Trust me.
Oh, that's a key point. Believe me, especially now. Especially
mm-hmm.
now. But
thank
it's
you.
Gonna be
you know, thank you. Look forward to seeing you.
You too. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, everybody, wasn't that great? Oh, what an accomplished life. Wow. I mean, if that doesn't inspire each of us to take what we have, the resources that we have, and not let fear stop us from making a difference. I think her key point is make a difference. Don't let fear stop you. Do the right thing. And I was so touched that she was inspired by the life of Dick Gregory, who was just all over the planet. Never said the words can't do it. Took on just a variety of issues. Jumped right in, and I remember she said, as they were close friends, if they were at some event, they always had picket signs in the trunk, and would see some people protest and would just stop and get out and join them. He was that committed to making a difference and helping to make changes. And we know that he would come here to Dallas. Dick Gregory would come here to Dallas each year as our publisher, Cheryl Smith, was fostering the Don't Believe the Hype Bowl-a-thon. And he was a faithful supporter of that until his illness would not allow him to come. And so we know him as our friend here in Dallas. And I mean, he could keep you rolling on the floor with jokes, but then he also touched social issues. I mean, he nailed it each time. He didn't miss valuable points on social issues. So what a force, what a life well lived. And so we're so grateful that Dr. Ife Williams has written that book about him. Let's see. I think we may take just a short break. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to finish looking at the world around us. hello, I'm back. We had a Blog Talk caller called in while we were on the break, so I'm going to urge them to go ahead and call back in. I guess they had a comment or a question. So, a caller, go ahead and call us back. We would love to hear what you have to say, and we hope that you will come come this Sunday to the African American Museum. Okay, let's see. Oh, press number one. Press number one to call in, and we'll hopefully we'll hear you. Press one. But thank you so much for calling. While we're waiting to see if you're going to get back in, I wanted to mention, and Dr. Ife Williams, who was our guest, spoke eloquently about just the need for us to really get involved in this voting issue. And we know that right now our Texas State Democratic legislators have left the state and flown to D.C. To try to put a halt to this voter suppression bill that the opposite party is so eager to pass, but our elected Democratic officials are making every effort to. We see it as voter suppression, which it is. It's voter suppression, even though proponents of this bill, they're saying that they're trying to make elections more honest and all that. But you have to call what you see what you see. We have to call what you see what you see. Our publisher just walked in. I'm telling off on her.
Hello.
And she is going, I'm going to have her to tell us a little bit about the book signing.
That's exciting. Isn't Dr. Williams the best?
She is fabulous. Uh-oh. Can you let your chair up?
Let me see.
Yeah. There you go. So Cheryl Smith, our publisher, is going to moderate the question and answer this Sunday, and Dr. Ife Williams says she's excited about coming, and we are excited about her coming. And guess what? She told us that our publisher, Cheryl Smith, is mentioned in the book. She said, have you had a chance? She asked us to ask you, have you had a chance to see what she said about you?
On page 147.
Page 147, y'all.
Yes, I am actually wearing, this is mask for the 50th anniversary of the West Side Gazette in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Okay.
And I'm wearing this. The publisher today is my classmate from Florida A&M.
Okay.
But his father was a businessman. He's still alive in Fort Lauderdale. The Fort Lauderdale Daily Paper wrote something that was not true.
Okay.
About Levi Henry.
Okay.
Levi Henry went down and said, y'all need to fix this. Okay, we need to fix that number. I didn't type that in there, but somebody has the wrong number in there for
the 202?
Yes.
Okay.
So let's fix that.
Okay.
So Mr. Henry said, you all need to retract that, printer retract it.
Okay.
The same, as large as you made that error, you need to fix it.
Mm.
And then they said, we're not going to do a thing.
Oh, goodness.
So guess what? He started his own paper 50 years later.
Wow. That's what award-winning
I'm talking
about. That's what I'm talking about.
And his son, it was really interesting because we didn't know the history of that when I was at FAMU.
Uh-huh.
But I do know we hated on him in class.
Because
we, Bobby is his son, and we said, Bobby Henry don't have to come to class because his daddy owned a newspaper. He got a job, you know. And we had to come to a class, and he's doing great things in Fort Lauderdale.
All right.
And I'm excited about Dr. Ife Williams. I tell you, I was on WBLN this morning in Chicago talking about, you know, they say there's always something going on in Texas.
Absolutely, always. We don't stop.
And the crazy don't stop. But I'm going to take you back to 1793.
1793. Okay, I'm back. Tell me.
Okay. And his name was George Washington.
George Washington, 1793.
He owned enslaved.
Okay. He was not alone.
Oh, no.
He was not alone in the ownership.
Mm-hmm. He signed the Fugitive Slave Act.
See, now that's a piece of history that missed me. I had not put that into my being. George Washington, our first elected United States president, signed the Fugitive Slave Act.
Now, fast forward to members of the Texas House voting to track down Democratic
legislators. And lock them up.
And knowing that they have no jurisdiction in D.C. at all, number one, so it's just hype. And as Texas says, don't believe the hype.
Mm-hmm.
But it just made you think about that fugitive slave, you know, that they said, return those slaves back to master.
Oh, my gosh. Think about that. You know, they say there's nothing new under the sun, and what goes around comes around, and we have to stay ever vigilant, because what we have won, we can lose it overnight, and they are working hard for us to lose our voting rights.
Well, we were around in 1965, and the same issues, because this is about more than just voting,
mm-hmm.
because when you look at who you vote for, mm-hmm. depending on who is sitting in that seat,
mm-hmm.
it
mm-hmm.
impacts all kind of benefits, health care, and it definitely impacts small businesses.
Teachers, and
everyone, because who cares, you know? Who, you know, subsidies go to big business, not to small business.
Right.
You know, you see this type of tone. And so, you know, we are in some tough times.
We are.
I got a call this morning from the Honorable State Representative Carl Sherman.
He's making some inroads.
Yes, he is. Mm-hmm. And being very, mm-hmm. you know, and you look at it, there are only 31 state senators.
Okay.
So only two of them are African American.
Mm-hmm.
Only two have been, you know, you have Senator West, you have Senator Barr Smiles,
mm-hmm.
and before that you had Senator Rodney Ellis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And before that you had Senator Eddie Bernice Johnson. But you see, we've only had two. Now, and the folks that the Democrats that said that they were not going to that went to Washington,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
there was mm-hmm. one who said that he felt that his constituents felt he should be here.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at him, you say, okay, he's young. He's this is his first, the 87th, this is his first session.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what?
Mm-hmm. What?
Representative Jasmine Crockett, it's her first also.
Wow.
And she's on the forefront. She's going to take,
absolutely,
she's going to be on the right side of history.
Okay.
And when you look at, I'm kind of shocked, not shocked, but it's a nice word to use.
Yeah, your eyes opened.
Yeah, when you look at the governor who is among those who are Americans with disabilities,
mm-hmm.
and part of the laws that he is trying to enact,
mm-hmm.
disenfranchise.
Clearly
those
disenfranchised.
With disabilities.
Mm.
You know, mm-hmm. and so, you know, I'm like, this is what we're looking at. And we said, we went and did what we needed to do. We voted.
Yes.
We need to vote again and again and again.
Right. Right.
And we need to see that voting does matter,
mm-hmm.
because one of the main people blasting our legislators was U.S. Senator John Cornyn.
Oh.
And he might not have been in office if the voting had looked different.
And, you know, one other riveting thing about it, as part of this bill that they're trying to get going, is all of the opportunities for voting, the helpful things, the drop-off sites. And one that really struck me was the soul-to-polls, where faith groups get on buses and go to the poll, trying to knock that out. Can you imagine? Can you imagine finding a reasonable way to convince yourself that the right thing to do is to stop worshipers from getting on a bus after they've worshiped and go to the polls? How can you convince yourself that that's the right thing to do? But that's part of the effort, is to stop that, stop those trips to the polls in buses. And so many others, removing the drop boxes, the mail, taking
videotaping.
You're
going to videotape you helping me to vote.
Wow.
Because it helped me to understand it.
For intimidation, it's so clear that it's a way to intimidate. You know, it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. But again, we have to stay ever vigilant, and our representatives are putting their pockets on the line, and you know, the opposition tried to make it sound, they're getting on these planes and luxury planes
with Budweiser.
Budweiser sitting on the arm of the chair, and
they better be glad it wasn't gin and juice. You know, and whatever the case, anything could be a distraction. But you know, the world is watching us, and I just say this is a lesson. A civics lesson, and also encouraging other people step up, legislators across the country, because if the census is going to have an impact, there were issues missing. You know, we're going to feel the pain of things that did not happen with the census
for
years to come.
Right.
And you
have
to consider this. States that lost seats, and Texas will actually gain one. You know, but New York, just by a matter of a few votes, New York lost one. So much is going on, and we need to be a part of it, and that's what we're trying to do here. And thank you for bringing it up and visiting with it and helping people to understand you have to get engaged. And for those, I would really suggest to those who ran for other offices and maybe did not, were not victorious, I would encourage them to become a precinct chair.
Exactly. And you know what? Another point. I'm so proud of our African American women who stepped up and decided to run for these judge positions. And so many of them were successful. And if that doesn't make a statement of how you can get up out of your chair, get up from your bed in the morning and go out and get involved in the life that you live each day and actually end up being successful. I mean, so many of them jumped into those races, were successful, and now hold those seats. The state representatives, Jasmine Crockett is one of them. So many of them, and I am just too proud of this generation who are getting out there, getting involved, and making a go of it, making it succeed, making it work, and being successful. So that's a statement, and it's inspirational.
It very much so is. Last night I was watching a session on with Black Bear, everyone from Susan Taylor to Star Jones to the Dr. Janetta B. Cole.
Okay.
And talking about voter suppression and what was going on. And Melanie, there were just so many women talking. It ended with Dr. Bernice King. You know, we have to run for office. We have to run for our community. We have to do so much. And folks say, you know, women, that's what Black women are used to. But in all that we're doing, I'm sending a plea out there to say, Y'all need to love on black women. Y'all need to love on black women, because if everybody else giving it to us, and you who we're doing it for,
yeah,
don't give us any love, you know, come on.
Right. Right.
Come on. Don't turn our movement into an imitation of life movement where you will cry and miss us when we're gone.
Right.
Celebrate these women. And that's why we have our superb women who I just absolutely adore.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, our superb woman today is Dr. Ife Williams.
Oh, I didn't even realize.
Yeah, and
I didn't even realize.
I'm just saying, let's find a way to love on our black women.
You know,
I'm not talking about nobody else. And if you come for Felicia Rashad, and I just say y'all don't know what y'all coming for, because you may think her sister Debbie Allen will get you, but you don't want her to unleash it. She was not. It's like being pro-black and folks trying to say you anti-white. She was addressing one part of the system, but she has lived a life of uplifting and upholding black women. So and women, period. So, you know, we need to be really careful about the narratives that we put out there, and we need to also be really careful about hiding behind a click and a hashtag and a social media platform, because one day you may find yourself out from behind it, and you don't want to be a victim of the very system that you perpetrated. And I say that in cases like when people are talking about Alexi, who got the job, and because of tweets that she did 10 years ago,
right?
And she ends up being losing a job.
Now we're not talking about the critical race theory.
Nicole Jones. No,
right? Yeah.
Alexi was. She was an NABJ. She may have been our emerging journalist of the year.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And she became a victim of her of something she was a part of. It was okay. Mm-hmm. We kept telling these young people, stop putting everything on social media.
Well, as you remember, the thing happened with we're blanking out on names today, but
Alexi McCammon.
Okay, and the African American woman who ran for the Miss America. Because she had had a revealing photograph
Vanessa Williams,
some years ahead. It came back to her.
It was, but guess what? Look at the sign of the times. You had Vanessa Williams, phenomenal woman, talent. I was so pleased and still pleased and her work, her life's work.
Mm-hmm.
But look at who became the First Lady of the United States.
Melania Trump. And her background.
And her picture.
And it's online. Anybody can look it up online. So it's just so many inequities out there. So many. But to get back to the honored African-American women, and we need to stop being intimidated by the strength of African-American women, because We got our strength from the experiences that we had to survive. And so that should not be a put off. It should be a source of pride that African American women were strong enough to come through all of those. Harriet Tubman, oh my gosh, what a heroine she was. And she received Ida B. Wells. All of those women got their respect and their due from the strength that they show. But why is that today put off? Why is that strength today a cause for intimidation by others? It should not be. It should be a source of pride.
Well, most definitely. And then you just consider we aren't showing that strength and being strong because we feel like we don't have anything better to do. We don't have any options. We aren't going to accept anything else. So, you know, we have to get up and do.
Absolutely. 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 Well, as Dr. Ife Williams said, this voter suppression issue is one of the best issues that we can hang our coattails too, and fight this battle and back our state elected officials. Do whatever we have to do. Get to the polls any way that we can. Sign on to any kind of protests and projects that we gotta fight this battle.
We have to send money. We have to fund our revolution.
Yes.
We have to give money to our elected officials. You said, I voted for you, not do your job. Well, they're doing their job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're doing their job, mm-hmm. and they are speaking up. And that's, you know, Representative Sherman was saying,
mm-hmm.
you know, we need President Biden to make a Lincoln move, if you will.
Yeah.
He need to make a move. And so some folks, you know, this is the time. You need to stand up. And I applaud the leadership. And we are going to fix that number in there again for Dr. Ife Williams. Because
remove that
zero. Yes.
It should be 262-678-6788. Take that zero.
Yeah, we
out.
Definitely
that
have
extra
to
zero.
Move that. But it's just an honor. I just came in here to see what you were doing and if you what's happening in your world. And we're going to just take that zero out of there. We're going to get it fixed and make sure that we have it there. And I think who is helping you with this, we will make that happen. But in the meantime, I can't say enough. You know, here I am with you, and I started to come in when you had Dr. Ife Williams, but I said, those are two giants. I better leave them alone. And let them say what they need to say.
Well, I cannot wait to. I did not get a chance to read the book before she came on, but I will be there Sunday, and I know that our audience will be there 4 to 6 p.m. African American Museum this Sunday, July 18. Dr. Ife Williams, who's a dynamite head, the president and CEO of the National Congress of Black Women. And she was a very close friend of Dick Gregory, as was our publisher here. And she has written this book about him. And so she's going to be here in Dallas this Sunday. And I know y'all are coming to get a copy and to get it autographed. So I will also be there, and I'm going to get my autographed copy.
Yeah, we're going to ask the men of Alpha Phi Alpha and all the other organizations, because I assure you, whatever, if any of them had, like, Mr. Gregory to come to speak or whatever, he didn't get what he could have gotten going somewhere else.
Oh, I know that.
And he gave so much, and even of his career, I am just so grateful that he was alive for the likes of Arsenio Hall's show to come back and for Bill Cosby to sit on there and say he was able to achieve what he achieved because of a Dick Gregory.
Yeah.
And, you know, and others, you know, the specials that were done. I know he and his wife, Mrs. Lillian Gregory, were tickled at some of the shows that came on, you know, in like the last year of his life.
Right.
He was not doing it for the notoriety. That's what I tell, you know, you get these young people who want to
get the glory.
Yeah,
they want the glory.
They come, I'm like, when you walk through these doors of iMessenger, I'm not in the celebrity making business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what I will do is help you do work that is celebrated.
Yes.
Your work will be your legacy.
Do the work, and the work will give you the glory. Don't
go
in there seeking the glory. It won't be reversed that way.
Some people, you take away Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, and they no longer exist.
No longer exist. And their self-esteem is gone. Their self-esteem and personal value is wrapped up in that social media, and that's not the way it is to be.
Definitely not the way. And you know, I appreciate you coming on and sharing information and doing what you've done for such a long time. And like I say, people think it's easy, and what makes it easier is when you get that love, when people say thank you, because they can sure tell you when you missing a period a sentence, but they won't tell you how great the sentences were before that period.
You are so right. Wonder why are we like that? We'll have to examine that psychologically, why we lean toward negatives and ignore the positives. Wouldn't it be a better world if we could reverse that?
And we need for people to realize, I was on 6:30 this morning, National Newspaper Publishers Association, well, 6:30 our time, and Stacey Brown and Dr. Ben Tavis were talking to, her name is, I'm going to say Joe, because it's like Jalori Williams.
Okay.
And she's the general manager at L'Oreal.
Okay.
And let me make sure I got that right.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's Jalori, and she's in Jacksonville. She went to Florida A&M. And she is, you know, she's running things. It was wonderful hearing her talk and everything and talking about, you know, when you say women are in positions of influence, positions of power, and when they are, we got to support them instead of looking for ways to tear them down, because it wasn't easy getting there.
Absolutely.
It was not easy, and I just encourage us to start looking at our Revlon, looking at our the women who, especially, and I'm talking to somebody who, if they, one heart, if there was a heart beating to their heart, and that person was a black woman, I'm asking you, I'm begging you, I'm imploring you to do better. If two hearts were beating in unison, your heart and someone else's, and that heart was a black woman, I'm asking you to do better. I'm asking you to show some love. I'm asking you to show some appreciation. I'm asking you to stop with the criticism. I'm asking you to, if she has her hair purple, and her having her hair purple is not putting food on your table, or clothes on your back, or responsible for the air you breathe.
That makes me think of that. Just, oh gosh, I can't even think of, but the young lady who was scheduled to, the Richardson young lady, to go to the Olympics, and oh my gosh, what a force of nature. That young lady was on the tracks, but then some people could only focus on her hair and her nails. How could they not notice the physical achievement that she accomplished? Have you ever tried to run that fast on a track? Oh my gosh. But yet some people did not even see that. They saw her hair and her nails. That's overwhelming. That's overwhelming. How can that be that you're so negative, that you're so blinded to the right things, to the achievements?
Let's celebrate her successes. Give her, you know, give her support so she can go on, because it's really interesting, because I was watching a documentary about, there was a wrestler named Andre the Giant, very tall man, and he talked about how people said things to him. It just shouldn't happen.
Well, you know, it makes me think, and to me, if we would, each of us would do this, I do think we would change our attitudes. That whole saying, it's a trite saying, walk in their shoes. You know, it's easy to say that, but if we actually put ourselves in the shoes of the other person, and we were talking about African-American women who don't get our respect and our due, and if we had these two hearts beating together, if you could switch places heart to heart, you'd be the heart on the left instead of the one on the right, and wear their shoes, walk in their shoes. I really, honest, I have to believe we would approach things differently. We would give more credit to the other person if we wore their shoes.
But I'm just trying to understand that, because there are certain things that I just get really basic with you.
Okay, okay.
Because I know a young lady, she's probably listening, Daphne Fain. She
mm-hmm.
works for Commissioner Price.
Mm-hmm.
And Daphne wears heels all the time.
Uh-huh.
She is completely comfortable in those heels.
Right.
That's Daphne.
Yeah,
that's her leg,
yes.
her back, her whatever.
Yes.
So why are you standing over there saying, I know them shoes hurt? No, they
wow.
hurt you.
They would hurt you.
And
well, you wear your shoes.
Yes, mm-hmm. and why is it, you know, like we may see someone and without any sleeves, like me, no sleeves,
mm-hmm.
and it's 20 degrees outside.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, I'm from New Jersey. It may not bother me.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So for you to say, I know she's cold.
Mm-hmm.
Walk your journey. Walk
mm-hmm.
in your
mm-hmm.
light. And then even for women, yes, we do understand some things, because the thing about it is, if your feet would be hurting, then why don't you think maybe that sister's feet hurt? That's
right.
why she's not smiling.
Right.
Or maybe it's that sister's time of the month.
Right.
You know what
exactly.
the time of the month is
mm-hmm.
like.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Where is the compassion? We have been taught by society to not have compassion for
mm-hmm.
women,
mm-hmm.
to not show love, to, it's to, you know, I tell you, crazy, I'm talking about getting basic.
Mm-hmm.
If a son comes home and tells his, let's say he lives with his mom and
mm-hmm,
dad,
mm-hmm.
he tells her that so-and-so, you know, is pregnant,
mm-hmm.
it won't be the man, the daddy who usually say, are you sure, sure? It's going to be the mom.
You're right. You're right.
It's because
right.
I know how them girls are. And it's just, it's like, no, don't have that type of conversation.
Mm.
Because, see, the thing about it, like I told one of my students at Paul Quinn,
mm-hmm.
when he was trying to label his daddy, who he didn't know as
yeah.
a sperm donor,
uh-huh.
I said, stay out of grown folks' business.
Okay. Okay.
You don't know what happened with your mama and your dad.
Exactly right.
And so do not get into that.
Mm-hmm.
What you should be doing is trying to have a relationship with both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, women should not keep their children away from the fathers because
of
what
their relationship
was. Oh,
now you're on my soapbox.
Was.
You're on my soapbox. That is my
yes.
soapbox.
And there are some bad daddies, but you know there's some bad mamas too.
Right, but don't keep that child away.
And we have
away.
To understand.
Don't build a wall between that child, because any problems that you had with your spouse or your significant other, that was the two of you. That had nothing to do with this child.
Mm-hmm.
This child needs that interaction with that dad. The child needs that interaction with the mom. So you two grown folks, handle your issues yourself. But don't put it off on that child. Don't separate that child from that parent. That's my soapbox.
Well, you know what happened?
What?
When that child get up older, they'll see, because they'll see how you treat the girl they bring home, saying that
mm-hmm.
She's pregnant with my child, and then you sit up there saying, you better go get it tested, you better do this. Is that because of that's what happened with you?
It'll come
or because you weren't? There has to be something. You know, I wish that we never had those shows where you had DNA tests.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
It made me sicker. I was laying up in the hospital and couldn't hardly move, and
yeah.
I was watching one of the shows, and this girl had been on one of those shows like about 16 times.
Wow. Oh, my
so,
goodness.
You know, is it travesty that she doesn't know who her dad is? Is it travesty that within that critical period she was with over 16 men?
Oh, my gosh. Oh
what
my gosh.
Does that mean?
Mm.
And I want us to get a handle on it. I want us to get back to the basics. I want us
right.
to swing that pendulum. And I'm just trying to think of a time when women were ever so loving and uplifting of one another that like we should, that time, because I'm longing for it. I love it when I can talk to a young person and they listen with respect and we have a conversation and they respect.
Well, I I want to compliment our publisher, Cheryl Smith, who is sitting here with us talking, with her series on our superb woman of the week, that she's running this series in Texas Metro News, her one of her three publications. But I just, at each week as I look to see who it is that time, I think of the impact that's going to have on that young lady's life and how they are out there doing things. And like you had said earlier, they not necessarily were seeking recognition, but to let them know, I see you.
Mm-hmm.
I see what you're doing, and I want to say thank you. I want to share your accomplishments with the world. And, oh, gosh, that gesture will have such an impact. And I truly believe that they'll pass it on. It's the whole gist of it is pass it on. You notice what they're doing. You say thank you. You have to share their message. Mm-hmm. I believe they'll carry that on. So I want to compliment our publisher, Cheryl Smith, for what she's doing with that series. It's making an impact.
I get so excited doing it. I mean, there's just so many people, and I try to recognize people, and I don't tell them. I don't tell them that this is what we're going to
right,
do.
Right, right.
And I, you know, just do it. And you find out things, and it's amazing because some people are behind little firewalls, because like I found out, sometimes just looking, I'll find out that someone's pregnant, but I won't say anything.
Okay.
That's what but one thing, if you'll notice, I do not mention who they're married to.
I had noticed. Yeah. And let me mention Mayor Ron Kirk, his wife. She made a point some years ago for women who are married to high profile husbands, and she told media people, give that wife their due. Don't call them the wife because they have their own life. They have their own achievements. And she was very effective in putting forth that message. Identify that spouse, that wife, and give her her own space. Give her honor for her own achievement. She's not just Ron Kirk's wife, you know. And so she very effectively put that message forward.
Right. And she's one of our superb women.
Mm-hmm.
And she has actually started her own business.
Exactly.
She's one of the many women who has, you know, she's the same in a number of arenas, but she's always stood on her own two feet. And too often we recognize people because of who they're married to.
Exactly.
And it doesn't help when you have, like, the wives of this or the wives of that, because that further promotes that it's not who you are,
it's who you're
married to.
Exactly.
And that's your claim to fame.
But now I need to comment on Bill Cosby's wife, Camille Cosby. Now, and I don't know, I guess you could look at her from both sides of, you could straddle the fence on her. On the positive side, she stuck with him throughout all of the mess.
Mm-hmm.
She literally has literally stayed in the background even during his career with him, you know, touring as a social commentator and as a comedian and as a TV personality. She stayed in the background. But she has her own things that she can bring to the table. But she effectively chose, I'm going to say she chose to give him the front seat. But I don't know what people think of Camille Cosby, but she has been, she stuck in there, and she, you know, stayed in the background. So I guess you can make your own judgments about that.
Well, and I wouldn't say she stayed in the background.
Okay.
I would say in the likes of, if you took Dr. Coretta Scott King,
mm-hmm.
you took Dr. Betty Shabazz.
Okay.
If you took, her name begins with the E, Mrs. Lowry.
Oh, uh-huh, yeah, Joseph Lowry's wife.
Yes, they were doing things, it's just that they weren't getting the attention.
Okay,
and they
okay.
were all somewhere doing things and walking their own journey while supporting. So
okay, but that also goes to, and let's see how we're doing on time. We've got about 10 minutes. That also goes to Frederick Douglass back during his time. Douglass didn't do all of those things alone. Now, he was a dynamic figure, but there were African-American women behind him organizing and promoting and supporting and being there for him. So it makes a statement that we've always been on the scene. African-American women have always been on the scene, but we haven't always, they probably would have appreciated the spotlight, but
well,
they didn't get it.
Well, we look at even Dick Gregory and his wife, Lillian.
Yeah.
Lillian was sitting in a prison, in a jail cell when she was pregnant.
Think about that. Now,
so
think about that.
You know, and for her to be having 10 children and the things that she was doing and the impact that she was having and then, too, it says something about having somebody healthy to come home to.
Oh, my goodness.
When you out there
wow.
in this crazy world out here and everybody's all over the place, having someone
to come home to. Wow. Now that right there is a statement in itself. That's a, and it can go both ways. Dolly Parton, I think she has been mentioned with her faithful marriage to her longtime husband. And I would assume that she took comfort in having him to go home to. He was not a high profile person, but they were there for each other. And that's just one example of many situations like that.
They're doing what they do. And it was really interesting. And as I look at your time also, because I call him Dougie, another Dougie, but Doug Emhoff, who is the husband of Vice President Kamala Harris.
Right.
And he came to town, met and hosted by Deborah P. Kane, the First Lady of Prince of West Baptist Church. And there were a number of First Ladies from across the Metroplex who talked to him about being the first man, if you will.
I think it is called first gentleman. First gentleman.
And just saying how, you know, you had women who were saying they never thought they would be marrying. And just talking about being there, being someone who listens and does it. Because sometimes you come home, you just need somebody to listen, to hear you. And then, you know, not just have all the answers, but just let you dump then go from there, and not, you know, everybody has their lanes. Lots of times two politicians don't match. You know, so the people
they cancel each other
things.
Out
and,
right yeah.
and whether, you know, the comedian may be, you know, there are women who will walk a different walk, you know, they talk a different talk, but they're doing something, knowing you're moving. And that's what we have to realize, and we have to celebrate that, you know, there's a place, and sometimes that's what the attraction. The attraction may be that you're not what I see every day.
You know, and that makes me think of a lot of times you hear people say someone has suffered a tragedy, and a friend might say, well, I don't know what to say. I can't go visit them. I don't know. But I've heard people say the thing that's important, They've had a loss. They're grieving. Just be there. You don't have to say anything. Just be there. And if they feel like crying on your shoulder, if they feel like sharing a memory, if they feel like letting go of some frustration, just be there. You cannot put a price tag on that position of just being there for a friend or a spouse or a significant other.
Calling them up, just sending a note, and understanding the difference between a text and a phone call. I think some people really need to look in their phone. They need to look at who they text, and they need to go back and scroll through the messages. Because if they find that they there may be messages like saying, I love you, how you doing, or all your messages, can you, will you, won't you. Go back and look.
Text,
you know, going through this phone can give you some ideas about some things you did or you didn't do. Because you go through the text and you say, oh, I asked for money this time. I asked for money that time. I asked for money. And it may make
did
you
Did I ever
evaluate.
Say, thank you. What you did was important to me. It got me over the hump. Nobody else was there to help me, but you were there. And if you're not doing that, if you're not playing, coming out of that role, then get in that role.
Yeah.
Get in that role of giving appreciation for folk who, like our publisher was saying, you know, you're constantly asking for money. Did any of those texts go back and say, you know what, thank you for giving me that $20. Thank you for getting me over that hump.
Did you try to pay it back?
I'll try to pay it back. My dad used to always tell us that he gave people three opportunities. I thought three was a little much, but he said, you can lend them some money the first time. Go ahead and do the second time. But no, that's what it was, the first two times. But if they come to you the third time, that's your automatic out. That's your exit door. You can say, well, you know what? You didn't give it back to me the first time. I tried you the second time. So I'm going to pass on this third time. That's what it was. The third time, you know, they said the third time is the charm.
Mm-hmm.
The third time is your exit door. You have an automatic built-in refusal because they had those first two opportunities. They didn't take them, so you take it.
Yeah, it's all about you have to give in to receive sometimes, and lots of times the blessings you are going to get are not going to come from the people you give them to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I look at, there's nothing expected of these superb women. I just like seeing them and knowing for some, it may save somebody's life one day. They
Absolutely.
May be looking up,
mm-hmm.
get our newsletter and say, oh my God,
mm-hmm.
somebody thinks of it. Because
mm-hmm.
people have, all this to say when you're gone, as I say, let's get out of this imitation of life way of living that we don't show it until, you know,
a lot
you
of times
the people
too
don't
late.
Matter. Yeah.
Lots of times.
Just like
too
an
late.
Apology, understand that apology does not make everything okay all the time. Don't
mm-hmm.
think you can excuse stuff away by saying
right.
I'm sorry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you got to pull back some of that stuff that you're
mm-hmm.
doing
mm-hmm.
and try to make this world a better place. I want to see some more out of our people. We're seeing what's happening with our elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see more from our community. I want to see people, don't wait until your child gets shot. I want to call out
right.
what's happening
right.
wrong. Don't wait until you get cancer.
Right.
Don't wait because some people are sitting home not concerned about anybody else in the world, but when it hits home, they want everybody to jump to
right.
them. I'm
right.
saying if we were all working together, we were
yeah.
all, if you get up every day, and I used to say this in closing on KKDA, they go out and do something for somebody other than yourself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if everybody it. Did it, this
that
world would be
it.
So much better.
Right.
Our neighborhoods would be cleaner.
Well, and you never know, again, when you're going to be the one who needs it, reach
mm-hmm.
out to and we've got about 90 seconds to go, but reach out to someone who needs it because you don't know when they may have to reach out to you, and it will make a statement to them. They will remember. They may not get they may not have had the opportunity to tell you thank you yet, but they will remember.
Definitely.
And you reach out, and it will, what is it, catch your bread, I think, on the water, and it will return to you. It will. Well, it's time for us to tell you goodbye. We've had a really fulfilling show today, and I'm so grateful that our publisher, Cheryl Smith, has come in and joined us. And you can see her and Dr. E. Faye Williams this Sunday, July 18th, at the African American Museum, 4 to 6 p.m., and you can get an autographed copy of the book about Dick Gregory, who we know here in Dallas, and E. Faye Williams has written about him. So come out, get your autographed book. Cheryl Smith is mentioned in the book because she was also a very close friend of Dick Gregory, and he certainly... Thank you. builders and the preachers. We have to get moving. Let's hear. Let's hear what Mr. Pendergrass has to say.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world's changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair.